1, 2, 3, 4.
I am not a raincoat here to keep you warm. Then go back in the closet after the storm. I'm not a match simply waiting to burn. All I am is a friend, your friend till the end.
Welcome to No Place Like Home, a podcast about missing pets. I'm your host, Mitch Bernard. I talk with owners, finders, professionals, and volunteers.
Of a city wish you loved more than everything you gave for it. And I'm not here to criticize the risk. All I am is a friend, your friend till the end. All I am is a friend, your friend till the end.
For this episode, I spoke with Stephanie Gingras, who handles animal control for the town of Colchester, Vermont. We talked about her career path, how the job can vary from person to person and from public perception to media portrayals to reality. We also talked about when and how to contact animal control and what happens next. She explained the role of private kennels in Vermont's animal control system, and we discussed the potential of a professional association she's been working on. And of course, we talked about how all of this relates to losing or finding a pet. Up next, my interview with Stephanie.
I am currently the animal control for the town of Colchester, and okay. I have been doing animal control for 8 years now.
Wow.
I started in 2015 with three communities, Essex, Colchester, and Winooski,
okay.
And have recently gone down to just Colchester.
Okay. And did you grow up around here? Was this like
I did kind of okay. A little back and forth. My family's we kind of a moving family. My family,
yeah.
My mom and her family are in Vermont, while my okay. father's family is in Missouri.
Wow, that's a long way.
So spent time going back and forth.
Wow, that's a lot of traveling. And so what got you into doing animal control work in the first place?
I had gone to, I actually met the person who was currently doing the job in 2014 at, mm-hmm. we called it Farm Camp. I'm also a veteran.
Okay. Thank you.
And so we went to a, veterans kind of women's veterans, retreat together.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so I was in 2014. In 2015, she decided she wanted to go back to college, and I didn't have a job and was like, hey, sounds
cool.
Good.
Yeah.
I've always been interested and loved animals. My first job was working at a boarding kennel.
Wow.
When I was 15.
Goes way back.
And has gone from there working at doing grooming and
I love that. I love grooming. It's very satisfying.
I'm working at, I worked at Petco for a while. So.
Yeah. Cool.
So yes, always been a passion and something I've enjoyed. So kind of took things in another direction and a next step.
Yeah. What was your perception of the job before you took it? Like, did you have any kind of expectations, and are they to turn out to be what you thought it was?
I guess it's so hard to, it's only been 8 years.
Yeah, but I know.
It's hard to kind of think back about what was I thinking before I did it. And I guess I kind of thought about a lot of, picking up stray dogs is
right.
A lot of what we deal with.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit of a misconception and definitely not entirely. And I definitely feel like my friend who had done it previously to me, she had done it for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I've definitely expanded the repertoire since then. And trying to think of the word here, but then the species that I have dealt with are definitely not the same species that she has dealt with in the two years that she did it, which 2 years versus 8 years, you're going to see a lot of different things.
Yeah, so do you think that that's related mostly to people's choices of pets changing, to expanding populations of pets, like just the sheer number? Or do you think it's a change in how people view animal control as a profession or some combination of those? I don't know.
Well, I think it has to do with, I think some of it has to do with the individual who's doing the job, to be honest. Because depending on the community and how the animal control views the job is going to determine what they're doing. You may have a job description and there's going to be things that fall outside of that job description. Well, if they there's a lot of people that are very, this is my job description. I don't deviate from that. Oh, I don't deal with that animal. I don't deal with that species.
I think that does happen a
Things like
lot.
I think in the past and still, there's some of that that goes on.
Yeah, I think that's very, I was thinking about the perception that I might have had before I got into like any kind of animal rescue, welfare, whatever, any of that kind of work. And I think, the media, storybooks and TV shows, it's all about the dog catcher. So like keep your dog away from the dog catcher because, and like I remember in cartoons, like the Bugs Bunny cartoons would sometimes have the dog catcher with this like jail truck, and the dogs were all kind of caged in the back and looking really forlorn. And I came to learn later that all the animal control officers I have known, which is admittedly a small sample, but in two very different communities, have been people who love animals and really want to take care of them and make sure that they get the help they need and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I wonder how much of that still persists until people get to know the officer in their particular community. So,
It's very common. The other common issue that I see is people don't know that in Vermont, I mean, in Vermont, and Vermont's the only place that I've done animal control. So I can't really speak on other communities, but I feel like it's a very common problem for me is people are like, oh, we have animal control? I didn't know we had an animal control officer. And I do get the, oh, the dog catcher's here. But I will admit that some of those are more, how do I want to say it? Are more traditional Vermonters, our old school people, our old school Vermonters that
Yes,
will
of
give
which
you
there
that
are
comment.
plenty.
And sometimes they're saying it in a joking manner.
Of course. But there, I think there is a lack of understanding of what the scope of your work is. And I would like to talk about that some. So the podcast here is a focus on missing pets, losing them, finding them. And so I think that I'd like to start at, what if I, as a private individual, come across a pet species, not like a wild animal or something, and I don't have the capacity to hold on to them. I don't know, maybe I have pets. A lot of times I see calls for help when people have dogs or cats of their own, and so they can't warehouse this found animal for very long, and they're advised to call animal control. What happens when you get that call?
Well, first, my biggest recommendation is whether you can house the animal or not, is to contact animal control, and reaching out, even if you can house the animal. So the things, what that can help is people aren't necessarily going to call individuals, and so. And that person may have already called, the owner may have already called the police department. When a, or the Humane Society, which the Humane Society then directs them to contact us to make us
Absolutely.
aware. So it's very helpful for people, whether they can hang on to the animal or not, to contact animal control.
Yeah.
And one quick thing, I feel like, you know, and I apologize that this kind of, I do suffer from a little bit of ADHD.
No
but one
problem.
Thing that I quickly want to clarify is that not, we have the title of animal control officer, but we're not necessarily officers. We are not necessarily police officers.
Okay.
And that's at least in the state of Vermont.
Right. Okay. And are you...
For example, I'm a civilian employee,
okay.
I'm not even an employee. I'm contracted with the town to provide a service. So that's kind of one big thing to kind of make people aware of is I try to go under the title of animal control warden.
Okay.
And then it doesn't necessarily give them that idea that I'm an officer.
Right.
An officer... When I think of an officer, that's somebody who can handcuff and arrest somebody.
Yep.
Report
them to INS, or it's not even INS anymore,
but
you know, immigration.
But even things like that, it can be intimidating.
Yeah.
And it also, it kind of gives a little bit of a false, like, idea of what we do.
Yeah.
Or who we are, because we're
right.
not necessarily, we're not. We don't have that necessarily have that police background, or we're
right.
not law enforcement.
Right.
Because when I think of officer, I'm thinking law enforcement officer.
Yeah.
That so is I don't have that training. I don't carry a gun.
Right.
They do give me a cool badge.
That's nice.
But I don't have that background. So I apologize
yeah.
for kind of making that distinction.
No, that's an important
a helpful
one.
Thing. We are called, and everybody's kind of, each community may or may not, may call it something different. And
right.
is often called an animal control officer.
Right.
We're not necessarily police officers.
Right.
If that makes sense. So sorry
it
about
does.
Going on that little
no,
tangent.
No, that is really important. And it's also interesting to me that, when I lived in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the animal control was contracted out to individuals or companies by each individual municipality. And it was really surprising to me to find that out, that it's not like a state or countywide jurisdiction, because there, for instance, if you found an animal in a particular borough, there might not be a contract in place for an animal control officer. Like, what is the person supposed to do? Or you're like, I lived on the boundary between the city and a little borough. And if an animal were found in my backyard neighbor's yard, they would be a city jurisdiction. But if they were in my, you know, front yard, then they would be the borough's jurisdiction. And that's so the uncertainty and unknownness, especially because these contracts do expire and they come up for renewal every you know,
yes.
year, 3 years or whatever. So you don't really know who's in charge. So it's really interesting to me that that's this case here too.
And there are other states that do it differently. So several years ago, probably about 9 years ago now, I volunteered at an animal shelter in Batavia, New York.
Okay.
Which is between Rochester and Buffalo.
Okay.
Nice little small town.
Mm-hmm.
But their animal control was done by their sheriff's department.
Okay.
And their
sure.
sheriff's department ran their shelter.
Yeah.
They had a volunteer organization that was kind of underneath and
yeah.
helped with fundraising and stuff like that.
Okay.
But it fell under the Genesee County Sheriff Department. So theirs was a little bit more
yeah.
centralized, and they were actually employees.
Okay.
So it really does vary by state.
For
other,
sure.
You know, states. It's interesting to hear that, you know, there is another state out there that does this
like,
a
I'm
similar
so surprised.
Way.
Like, of the two places that I've lived recently, it's, you know, that's the same. And so
I just
what
thought
kind of
Vermont was backwoods.
Right. Like, I was like, this is so insane. And then I move here and I find out, oh, that's the normal here, too. Like, to me, this is a very sane place. Pittsburgh is very sane, too. I shouldn't put it down. I loved it there, but you know, it's the things that surprise you about, you know, when you learn them. So, so you're an individual contractor, you,
yes.
Are responsible to the police, like they put your contract in place or the town government itself.
So the town manager is the one who actually signs my contract.
Okay, sure.
So all that stuff is done through them.
Gotcha.
You know, the checks and things are cut through the town of Colchester.
Okay, yeah.
But, which it's kind of a little bit of a hazy area, is yeah. I report to, yeah. I use that because I'm a contractor.
Sure, yeah.
But I report to the chief of police.
Okay.
Which is not necessarily the way that every community does it.
Right, right.
But I report to the chief. In prior years, I had a sergeant that I reported to. So it wasn't like, you know, there was intermediate levels.
Sure. Yeah.
But we've had some transition.
Yeah.
And I use their system. So like if you get pulled over for speeding, your information will, you know, the police department calls dispatch. Hey, I'm pulling this person over. And then there's a case created.
Okay.
So it's a similar thing with animals, animal problems.
Mm-hmm.
So I use their database. It's a database called Valcor, which luckily now the state of Vermont, as far as I know, and I'm like, you know, I don't want to speak wholeheartedly on that.
It's okay.
as far as I understand, the whole state is now using the system called Valcor.
Okay.
There was another system that, so the state used to use two different systems, Valcor and something different. I apologize because I had it and then I lost it. Which could be difficult because you weren't seen, you know, unless you had access to that system, you couldn't see it.
Sometimes there's context and other circumstances.
Yes, because you're trying to look up, you know, you're looking up, you get somebody's name and you're trying to look up prior incidences.
Yes.
And you can't see them because they're in the other system. So it's really nice that actually that now the police departments are all centralized on the same system. And it was hard because when I first started working out or working, I was doing the three communities. Well, one of those communities used the other system and two of them used the Valcor, which everybody's on now.
Yeah.
So I do all my reporting there at the station. And I'm getting my phone calls through dispatch.
Okay, that's good.
So if
call 911 or.
Well, no. So what you want to do is if you have a found animal, unless it's an injured animal, you want to use the non-emergency number.
Right. Or the police department
So the biggest thing, misconception that I feel that people have about 911 in general is what it should be used for.
Yeah.
And what constitutes an emergency. Finding a lost pet is not necessarily an emergency.
Right.
You're witnessing a pet being abused. An animal was hit by a car.
Yeah.
That I might call 911.
Sure.
But on the other hand, I know it sounds kind of harsh, but I might not call, I might not block up 911 for an injured dog.
That's the way to think about it. Is like, so, what are the other things that might be more urgent than this? You know, like there are people getting shot or robbed or what, like there's actual violent
crime going
on.
That's kind of what 911 is like for.
Right.
And 911 is, you know, for those like emergent things. And I know we love our pets. I love pets.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, if you're calling the non-emergency number, you're going to get that direct person.
Yeah.
So you're getting you're getting your local dispatcher. And that local dispatcher will reach out to their animal control or send out a police officer if that's what's needed, depending on, you know, circumstances. Where you have an emergent, but maybe not 911 sufficient call.
Right. Yeah.
You're calling about a dog that was hit by a car. There's no human life in jeopardy at this point. You found this dog injured on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Not necessarily something to call 911 about. Because if you call 911, you're going to get the 911 dispatcher. Then they're going to call the local station.
Yeah.
And then you're going to be, you know, connected with them.
Sure.
So let's just cut out the middleman.
Yeah.
Unless there's an actual emergency. If you were, and it depends on the area that you're in.
Okay.
Because some areas don't have you know, some areas don't have like a local police department.
Okay.
Eden, the town of Eden. That's just something that I think about top of my head. I'm pretty sure that they don't. So state police covers them.
Right.
But also, and it's a little bit more difficult. Like, okay, where's the state police barracks that covers Eden? Okay,
yeah.
Let's just call and we'll get transferred over type thing.
Yeah.
I see a dog running around on the interstate. The interstate is covered. Is covered is not the word I'm looking for, but I think we kind of understand.
It's in the jurisdiction of like the state troopers and stuff, right?
Yes. In Vermont's state police.
Yeah.
Is that's their jurisdiction is the highway.
Right. Yeah.
So that, and especially if I'm driving down the highway in Brattleboro, like I don't know which,
yeah,
you know, where their home base is. So
yeah,
I'm gonna call 911.
Yeah.
So those are some situations that 911 would be helpful. But so, most often it's going to be more efficient to contact the non-emergency numbers.
Right. So it's a good number to program into your phone.
Yeah.
So, and does that change with hours? Like during business hours, you call non-emergency or do you have coverage on that number at all times?
So for my town and my community, our police department, we have dispatchers on 24/7.
Good.
And there are, and that's the other nice thing about, you know, contacting, you know, having dispatch to contact, because if for some reason, like it's 1 o'clock in the morning, they'll send an officer out to deal with whatever animal situation may be going on instead of calling me at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Unless
that's nice.
Unless it is nice something that's necessary.
Yeah.
So, a lot of our communities, their local police departments are manned 24/7. So the police department's going to be manned 24/7.
Right.
But they might not have dispatch
in the
after hour, or there might not be an after hours non-emergency number.
Okay.
So a lot of times what can be helpful, and it's helpful just in a general sense, is being familiar with your police department's website.
Yeah.
As a community member, being familiar with, you know, do they have certain hours? Because some police departments do. I had to deal with an animal cruelty case that the dog had been removed, or like it was adopted in Winston, New Hampshire. Well, that police department was only open until like 3 o'clock.
Oh,
well, there's police officers working, but the building itself is not accessible.
Yeah,
so we had to kind of work around things.
Gotcha.
So it's good things to know. And I don't know. I know a lot of the communities, our Chittenden County communities.
Yeah.
Not even Chittenden County. But I mean, I can think of like the direct ones around me, I guess. South Burlington, Colchester, when he's things like that. You can call the non-emergency number 24/7.
That's good. So those are things that people should look up and know, you know, when they move to a new place or they're, you know, getting acquainted with. So you mentioned animal cruelty. Where I came from in Pittsburgh, there was a separate humane officer who handled any humane cases, cruelty, neglect, abuse, whatever. And animal control was more for lost situations, found situations, accidents, you know, things like that, containing the animals, I think. Is there a separate role for that here, or do you serve as the humane investigator or whatever for those cases too?
Yeah, so it can vary. So one of the biggest things when it comes to dealing with animal cruelty in Vermont is there's a state statute that kind of discusses that.
Okay.
I have it saved and open on my computer on my cell phone right now.
Nice.
I was looking at it in the last couple of weeks. So if you're going to animal control, humane officer, and be the one investigating animal cruelty, you have to have attended the state approved animal cruelty course, which is something that is given by the police academy.
Okay.
Once a year. It's a 4-part course. I attended my course in 2014. I'm hoping this year when I see the dates come out, it's always nice to get a refresher.
Definitely.
But I do seem to be more recently, I feel like, but have dealt with cruelty on a relative, you know, not frequent, but a relative basis.
More often than you maybe used to.
Well, and more than I would want to.
Yeah.
One is more than we want to, right?
Yeah, right.
But that's the big thing with the state of Vermont, is that they made it an animal control officer you have to have gone to the training.
Okay.
In order to investigate animal cruelty.
Okay.
In communities that do not have a trained animal control officer, game wardens, your local game warden will investigate animal cruelty. And game wardens do fall under the umbrella of law enforcement.
Right.
So they can give somebody a citation. They can, or, you know, they can do a lot of those things. So they fall under the umbrella of law enforcement. They do have different training.
Yeah. And, you know, I have been reading about this a lot lately, because there's a, again, in Pittsburgh, a lot of my friends are still in Pittsburgh, so I see their Facebook posts. I see a lot of conversation about deer calls and other kinds of wild animals. They're doing these different kinds of calls to manage population. And, you know, there's obviously a lot of controversy about that for various reasons from different parties. Mm-hmm. And one of the complaints has been that the, you know, fish and game, fish and wildlife, whatever it's called, wherever you are, can have a different priority, a different agenda from someone who might be doing what you do. So mainly because they're trained and experienced with wild animals primarily, that's why they got into what they're doing. But also, you know, sort of the human wildlife interface and, you know, those kinds of issues. So that's very interesting. I'll have to see if I can find someone around to interview about that.
Here in Vermont, it's very new. So it's within like the last year or two that they've had.
Okay.
So very new. Yes. Within the last couple of years that fish and game has, your game warden has kind of taken over that role.
Right. Interesting.
So you've got a couple things where, I mean, I guess I haven't asked for sure or anything, but my perception is that that was done because, so you've got Eden.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a police department. They may not have a trained animal control officer.
Right.
So that would fall in the state police.
Right.
So instead, the game warden, you know,
let's
take that responsibility away from the state police.
Right.
And give it to the game warden. And
some
nice things I can see about that. I have not had to work with them yet because I am trained. I have a municipality. I've worked with game wardens in the past. I do know of a rescue organization that recently did have to work with the game wardens on a cruelty case, and it went very well.
Wow, I'd love to hear more about that. Maybe offline.
And I'd be happy to give you, you know, some of that information or their information.
Cool. Thanks.
But the so it can alleviate some of that. And you've also got right there with you people who can do, you know, they can apply for a search warrant.
Right.
I mean, I always bring an officer with me.
Mm-hmm.
But say you just had Joe Smith, animal control in Eden, Vermont.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, it's a little bit more of a process.
Yeah. And there are situations I know when, you know, you might find yourself in a position of needing to maybe tranquilize an animal or, you know, subdue an animal in a humane way. And not everyone is trained to use that equipment or, you know, administer those kinds of things. So, and I know so much of this is bound up in budgets, you know, Eden, I'm sure, you know, these towns that don't have their own police departments, it's not a coincidence, you know, you have to allocate your funds somehow. So that is just part of, I think, modern life in the United States right now.
And I've found that many animal control there's a lot of towns, especially your smaller towns, where they work strictly on a volunteer basis.
Yes.
And they're, you know, and a lot of those are, you know, the stereotypical dog catcher.
Yeah, sure.
But which is a great thing to be doing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not safe to have dogs running loose.
Yeah.
I apologize because that kind of went somewhere, but I wasn't
That's
sure where
okay.
I'm
I'm
lost where I
amazed
was
when that
going.
doesn't
But
happen all the time with people.
they vary very differently. You know,
Yeah.
like I'm contracted. Burlington, they have what's called CSOs, which for the life of me, I've been trying to remember
Can't think
what it
what that would
is.
stand for.
It's a very common like name for a position, but I cannot remember what it is, save my life. But they're actually employees of the city and of the police department.
Sure.
Where other towns, they're paid each time they go out. Or they're not
Interesting.
Paid at all, and it's strictly volunteer.
Yeah.
So it really varies. And your volunteers
Yeah.
are most likely not going to be trained in
Sure.
investigating animal cruelty.
Yeah.
Because the class is very inexpensive to go to.
Yeah.
But, I mean, by inexpensive, one session's like $25. But
Yeah.
that's... I mean, that's a rough amount. I haven't looked.
Yeah.
I think I looked
It's
last
not
year. But that's a
thousands.
rough amount. It's pretty inexpensive.
Yeah.
But that's $100.
Right.
I might not have an extra $100,
Yeah,
especially
a lot
this
of people don't.
day and age. So of somebody who's volunteering is not necessarily going to be able to attend that training. And sometimes your volunteers are doing full-time jobs, running a farm, working at a vet clinic,
Absolutely.
Working at a grocery store.
Yeah,
So,
my friend who was in Pittsburgh, who was a humane officer and still is, was a volunteer. She raised money to go for her trainings there. It was like $1,200 or $1,300.
Oh, wow.
It was an extended period, you know, of and they did, you know, like they would go to, they did farm visits and all kinds of things as part of the training. It's a good training, I think. But she had it was all volunteer. She had to pay for her own uniform, you know, her own gas. She covered a whole huge area.
Wow.
Like it's really, and then, you know, that kind of brings me to another thing I wanted to talk about, which is it can be really thankless work. You know, everybody who does, in my opinion, everybody who does any kind of animal welfare work, animal cruelty work, veterinary work, but especially like in shelters, rescues, and government entities, they really are doing very difficult, challenging work, not just physically and like in terms of resources, but psychologically, that can be really, it can be really difficult. And when the public perception can be that you're the enemy, you're taking the animal, you might hurt the animal might get put to sleep if you're brought into the situation, that's got to be really, that's got to be hard, I would think.
Oh, yeah. Some people, and I always have to remind people when I go to situations, and I think that it's very different based on how every person approaches the job.
Right.
It's just like, I mean, you know, everything's not black and white, but you'll have some people in their positions in animal control and other positions that they're in are like, nope, this is the way it is, or this is the way. My biggest goal, and I always have to remind people, is I'm here to help you help your pet. I'm like, education is a very big piece.
Sure.
Social
yeah.
work. I mean, I should have a master's in social work. I am not. Some people take this job and to help the animals, which is amazing. But it's, so that's where the narrow-mindedness can happen sometimes, is we're thinking of just the animal.
Right.
You got to broaden that horizon.
Yeah.
So it can be, and it can be very difficult because here you're trying very hard to help these people. And sometimes your supervisors don't notice, or your town doesn't notice. Oh, you did X, Y, Z. That's great.
Like you really helped this family get, you know, I know like hoarding situations, a lot of times, especially people need economic help. And like you said, social work help and family interventions and all, there's a bigger picture of what's going on. So if you just focus on this one animal's current situation, it's not going to solve anything.
Yes.
So yeah, you really are wearing a lot of hats.
Yes. And the other thing is, you know, I've also kind of my perception and my thinking has adapted over the years is, you know, I think when I went into it, I was kind of gung-ho and I was like, oh, they're abusing that animal. Let's remove that animal. Or that animal's being neglected. That animal needs to be removed.
Yeah.
That might not necessarily be the ideal situation for that animal or that family.
Right.
So let's figure out what's the real problem here.
Yeah.
Okay. We're having some food insecurities because humans aren't the only one with food insecurities.
Yes. Absolutely.
Where can we get these people access to food?
Yeah.
Do they need a 5 pound? And, you know, this, I'm in a situation where I can do this.
Yeah.
But there are resources available. So she gets, you know, I had a person one time, I said, how are you doing on food for the dog? Mm-hmm. Well, I don't get paid till next week and we really don't have any food left.
Mm.
All right. I ran to Big Lots and I got her just the small bag of dog food and brought it over to her. Like I said, I'm in a position that I'm able to, you know, financially that I can do that.
Yeah.
But there's also resources. Letting people know about resources. The Humane Society, I can speak about the Chittenden County Humane Society and others might have this as well, is they have a pet food shelf.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of food shelves in the last few years have started having a more consistent amount of pet food available at the food shelf.
Yeah.
And some of these people don't know about that. They
don't know. I think a lot of people don't know. I think a lot of people don't know.
Letting them know about these resources. Maybe that person doesn't drive. All right.
Yes,
if you're in a position where I'm going to be, the Humane Society's on Shelburne Road. I'm going to be on Shelburne Road on Thursday. I can swing by and grab you some food.
Yeah.
Or, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
Can be super helpful. And then they get over, they can get over that hump.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you find that family where I bought them a bag of dog food. I think within the month, their dog did end up going to the Humane Society.
Yeah.
And you know what? We tried to figure it out. It was not able to work. And he moved on and got a great home.
Yeah.
But immediately removing a dog from a home or suggesting it isn't always always the solution.
Right. Yeah. Especially look if at you the different fix angles. Some bigger problem. Yeah. So when you take, I'm going to compare again to what I know. So in the city of Pittsburgh, the animal control officers had a contract with, or the city, I guess, had a contract with one big shelter system that operated two shelters in the city. And that was, one of them was their animal control facility. So anytime an animal came in to animal control in the city, it went to this specific shelter. Do you have a relationship with a shelter like that? Or do you have a separate facility, a pound? Or what's your situation?
So the way several communities, especially here in Chittenden County and in the immediate like Burlington area, that's something that I can speak more specifically on because it's, you know, my knowledge base.
Of course.
So we have, so I'm contracted with the city. Mm-hmm. The city has a contract with a local private boarding facility.
Okay.
Where we take, so you call with a stray dog.
Mm-hmm.
I come out, pick up said dog, and then I bring her to our private boarding facility.
Okay.
It is a boarding kennel that I actually, my dog scheduled to go there this weekend while we go camping.
Nice.
So it's a private boarding facility.
Yeah.
The dog goes there. We have a contract at a contracted rate for the dogs to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And then they stay. Every town is different. Mm-hmm. So Colchester, we have a 10-day hold on stray dogs.
Okay, that's great.
And then after that, we have, our town has a contract with the Chittenden County Humane Society for our dogs to go to the Humane Society at the end of that 10-day
hold. Right, right.
Okay. And from there, they will get any needed medical treatment.
Mm-hmm.
They will get spayed and neutered.
Yay.
They will get vaccinated.
Yeah.
And that gets, that piece gets done at the Humane Society.
Okay.
But a caveat to that is, just so people understand, we will treat any immediate needs.
Of course,
we come in with, just so people understand, we do. So I pick up a dog that was hit by a car. My first drive is to Bev's.
Yeah.
Which is the Burlington Emergency Vet in, it's technically Williston.
Okay.
So they will get, in our care during that 10-day hold period.
Right.
If something comes up that is, I'm sorry, I'm like at a loss for words these days, but like
that's okay.
Immediate,
yeah,
emergent, type of situation.
Yeah.
We will.
You're not going to just let them suffer with that for 10
days. We will get those medical needs met. A lot of times, we get a dog with fleas, we will give them a Capstar.
Yeah. Yeah.
We try to. There was a dog recently at the boarding kennel, not from my town, but from another town. And she had severe allergies. Mm. At least that was kind of our assumption, because she had really bad skin problems.
You can't know, very itchy. Yeah.
So we gave her some Benadryl, the kennel. I'm just really good friends with the woman who owns it.
Yeah, that's nice.
She gave her some Benadryl to just kind of, settle things down for this poor dog who was so itchy. Yeah. So we do treat those kind of like emergent medical needs.
Sure.
I mean, we have an emaciated dog. I'm not going to bring it to the vet.
Yeah.
Because there's really not much that a vet can do with emaciation. You just have to start the refeeding process.
Right.
But, we got a big gash in our leg.
Yeah.
We've got a small cut on the leg. Mm-hmm. I'll sit there and maybe put some ointment on it and keep an eye on it. But I'm not going to necessarily bring a dog to the vet for that. They've got diarrhea. Unless there seems to be dark red, like black blood in the stool, I'm not going to take them to the vet. There's a little bit of blood in the stool. I might not, because when you strain, you get a little blood in the stool. So those are just kind of some examples of what we may or may not, but we do take care of medical needs. But that's how a lot of there's about 4 or 5 communities now that bring dogs to the same boarding facility.
Okay.
And it's a private facility, but the towns vary on their hold period. For instance, Burlington will only hold dogs at the boarding kennel for 5 days.
That's still a lot longer than, I know places that do 2 or 3 day holds, and holidays and weekends do not make a difference, because the shelter populations and the number of dumped dogs, and whether they're brought to a shelter or dumped literally like outside, is just enormous. So these facilities have to do something. They have to make decisions that people don't want to make themselves. And so, it's left to these organizations that's a whole other episode or 12. Well, that is really so much interesting information. I have so many more questions, so I might want to have you back, but I would also like to get some names of some of these other entities that you talked about to follow up on, how they got into it and what they do. Oh, I know. I knew I was going to think of more questions. How many are you the only animal control officer for Colchester, the town?
I am. I'm the only one for Colchester. And when I had Colchester, Essex, and Winooski, I was the only person handling those three communities. Okay.
Well, yeah, that's a lot. That's tough. And are you finding that there are, maybe you don't know this, but you were talking about this association that you have been working on starting, I think. Is that correct?
Yeah, so there's the Vermont Animal Control Association, and it's kind of, it's been around for a while. Unfortunately, I don't remember when it first started. I know things had gotten, it kind of seems to ebb and flow. And which happens, you have people who move on, and then for some reason the interest isn't super strong, and then it kind of things die, and then people bring it back. And so that's happened in the past. So that's what I'm trying to work on doing, is bringing the association back. Some key things that I think would be great about having the association kind of up and running, having meetings, is a little bit more continuity of things. Having places where a place where other animal control people would feel comfortable, like asking questions, knowing that there's resources, knowing that there's people to reach out to and ask for help.
Especially because the work every day is so solitary for so many people, so many of you, you know, it's a one officer to one jurisdiction. So,
And then we could have things a little bit more centralized. Like I get, sometimes I'll get messages because I'm, myself and another woman are the admins for the Facebook group.
Okay.
And I'll get messages, hey, I found this stray dog, or I need to report animal cruelty. Who do I call? Or they'll give me a long story about the animal cruelty.
Yes.
And then I just kind of Google and figure out who it is.
Right.
And direct them there. So being able to kind of more centralize that and having a list would be nice.
Yeah.
And be really helpful. So that way when people are reaching out, we're able to give more accurate information.
Yeah.
And then also recently, there are some communities that don't have anywhere to bring a dog. So there was a town recently who got a call, hey, somebody brought in a stray dog to an emergency vet, and they're like, I don't have anywhere to bring it.
Yeah.
Well, as an organization and as members, like we can help, we could maybe help formulate, like, okay, what can we do to help that community?
Yeah.
That community needs some assistance. What ideas can we give them?
Right.
How can we back them up in needing this? That's some of the reasons. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Kind of perfect timing. There's my work phone. but those are some of the, you know, the things that the association just, you know, their the purpose is to be able to connect animal control and together. And then also being able to support these animal control wardens, officers, the game wardens, and supporting them in needing training, you know, possibly assisting with financial help. And then assisting with, you know, backing them up.
Yeah. And I'm sure like the network of people I have who've been through the same training that I have for the responding to missing pet cases. We have a couple of Facebook groups that are super valuable for brainstorming situations. People will share, you know, footage from their trail cam and say, you know, I've got this dog that just will not go into this trap. I've tried, you know, these 10 things. Like, and people say, oh, well, maybe try whatever, you know, just the brainstorming and, you know, having 50 brains instead of just your own can be super helpful, especially because we also tend to be doing this stuff on our own.
So. And one thing, you know, when we're going, so this town that doesn't have anywhere to bring stray dogs to like hold them, they are one person going up against their select board and their government saying, I need some kind of facility or I need somewhere to bring dogs. They're one person where we can back them up and say, these are the reasons. These are towns that are in similar situations. This is all kind of hypothetical. But yeah, like, that's what the association's kind of purpose is, is to kind of back those people up. And so, because we're, a lot of us here in Vermont are lone wolves.
Yeah.
So I'm going to my town asking for something. And yes, I can do research and stuff, but it's nice to have a place that the research is already there.
Yeah, absolutely. Have, you know, some, here's how these other places are doing it. So like it's based in something. I'm not just coming to you with some crazy, you know, wild haired idea. Yes. So yeah, that would be really helpful.
It's like lobbying. I mean,
I mean, you have to advocate for what you need, and they're trying to juggle priorities between what you need and what all the other people who are asking need. And so you do have to make a case that, you know, this is what I need, and this is what I will do with it, and this is the benefit that will bring to the community. And that can be really hard to do, especially because there's not a lot of data about what you do and shelter work and rescue work. And, you know, there's Yeah, that's a whole other ball of wax
Yes.
too. That's very frustrating.
And it's nice to have just an organization to be in your corner and something bigger
Absolutely.
than you. At least that's how I
Yeah.
feel, is having something bigger than yourself in your corner just can give
Yeah.
you so much more support. So that's why I'd love to
Yeah.
see the association get bigger, and kind of just come into its own again.
Yeah, and I think a membership or an officership in an association like that of professionals in your field, in your area, could add some credibility to people applying to get those contracts next time. So,
Yes.
you're the municipality and you're looking at two contractors, and this person, might not adhere to the standards that the association is setting. Your association could have certain principles or standards or whatever that say, this is the minimum that we would require for accreditation or whatever. Like, there's a lot that
Yes,
you could
no,
do with
definitely.
a professional organization. So good luck with that. And
Yes, thank you.
let me know if you think of anything I could do to help.
Yes, of course.
Thank you very much for the work that you do. And it is vital to every community to have someone like you in their corner.
Thank you.
And I really appreciate you taking the time to spend with me today. Is there anything else that you want to get out there before we say goodbye? Any other things coming up or anything, important for Colchester or Vermont, or just other than like spay and neuter your damn pets?
Right, and spay and neuter and vaccinate. Please get
Yes.
rabies.
And microchip. Yes, all of those things.
Microchips are wonderful. One key thing I want to say about microchips is making sure that they are registered.
Yes.
We frequently run
Yes.
into registration and information updated. So you get your pet
Yes.
from the Humane Society. Humane Society's microchip pets. Well,
Yes.
you need to make sure that your information, now that microchip is registered to you,
Yeah.
because I will scan that pet and it's registered to the Humane Society, which is
It's
can
better
be
than nothing.
helpful because
Yeah.
it's something.
Right.
But sometimes I'm getting microchips that were done at the animal by the animal control in North Carolina. Well,
Right.
they aren't sure where that dog went from
Yeah.
there.
9 years ago. Yeah. You don't know.
So making sure
Yeah.
that that information is up to date,
Right.
and accurate is key. I will
Absolutely.
say that as an animal control, and one of the things that I do is I definitely do a lot of sleuthing.
Yeah.
So I get, I call up and they give me first and last name and phone numbers and address. Well, those aren't up to date. So
Yeah.
I go on Facebook.
Yep.
I Google. I have Facebook called people and said, "Hey, I found your dog."
Yeah.
And, but not everybody's going to do that. So you need to
Yeah.
make sure that you're keeping that information up to date.
Yeah.
Making sure that people that you're calling when you have lost your pet.
Yes.
And that's a very key thing is, calling around, call the Humane Society. Because the hard thing is, dogs can go to various different communities.
Yes,
I had a
they
dog when
can
I was working in
travel.
Essex. Somebody brought them from Eden.
Oh my gosh.
They found them, but they were coming to Essex. I'm like, what
Right.
possessed you to actually bring them here?
Yeah, that's like the worst nightmare. We talk about that a lot in our network about one, in fact, one of my unfortunately unresolved cases was a little Italian greyhound that went missing very near not just an interstate, but also an intersection with another interstate, like a junction and very busy tourist, area, leaf peeping, orchard kind of places, and busy big suburb. So we knew that it was really like a needle in a haystack kind of thing, and we knew that there was every possibility that he got picked up at a rest stop or gas station or the orchard or whatever, and somebody transported him totally out of the area. It's just a nightmare to think about,
Lost and found flyers are another
Yes.
fabulous item to use.
Yeah.
Facebook is great.
Yes.
There's a couple of Facebook pages. The one that I use most frequently is Vermont Lost and Found Animals. Or is it Lost? Yes, Vermont Lost and Found
The one with the
Animals.
yellow
Yes, they
icon
have a
is the one I
yellow
use all the time.
logo.
That's like lost and found Pets Vermont or something like
yeah,
that.
Something
and that,
like
it's
that.
the best
And then
one,
there's
I think.
another one that I've seen that pops up in my news feed. I can't remember what it is, and that's of course good as well.
There's a
The
Pabu's
that might be
page,
the
I
one I'm
think
thinking of
that's the
is the paw
green.
boot.
Yeah. I love
If
how
your
I
dog's
remembered it in my head.
microchipped, making sure to notify the microchip company that your dog is
Yeah,
lost.
for sure.
And then
Yeah.
flyers are great because you might have a senior citizen who is not on
Yep.
Facebook. My
Absolutely.
grandfather, this was several moons ago, like 20 years ago.
Oh my
So,
gosh.
but he found a dog
Yeah.
and it ended up being a friend of mine's dog.
Oh my gosh.
And
Small
but he
world.
didn't know, like he didn't know who to call.
Yeah.
He, you know, I mean, he was in his 70s, but he didn't have any idea who to call.
Yeah.
And I think my friend had posted on like Craigslist, and because I
Yeah.
don't think 20 years ago
Yeah.
Front
Next
Porch
Door and
Forum was
Front
around, so
Page
I think
Forum.
he
Yeah.
posted on Craigslist, and my mom
Yeah.
is always looking for new dogs, and she had seen it, and she's like, "Wait,
Yes.
my dad has that dog."
Yes.
So it's
Yeah, the other.
definitely reaching out to some of those other places.
I was going to say one of the other, some of the other things that we recommend for people, in case it ever comes up for you, in addition to flyers, which you can hand out to people you see in person, or you can put in a bulletin board in a business, or you can put in someone's doorway if they're not there. We do big neon posters, like the kind of posters that you get for your kids' science fair thing, and just a picture of the animal in color, and then lost dog or lost cat, and a phone number they can text or call, and that's it. And you put those up at intersections because someone driving by can register at least that there was an animal there, and they can go back and look, or if they've got a passenger in the car, they can write down the phone number or something. We also recommend putting a sign in the location where the animal was found. It says, found dog or found cat, and a phone number where someone can call, because someone driving around might see that, who wouldn't see anything else. So yeah, there's a lot. I mean, social media is great for the people who are on it, but like you said, there's a lot of people who are not, or who are not on it very often, who might not think to look there.
Yes.
So yeah.
The one last thing that I can think of really quick when you brought up intersections and putting up
Yeah.
signs at intersections, this is great, but it made me think of the road. Never, ever chase, and this isn't saying to you, but to
Oh
your
my God,
viewers,
yes.
never, ever chase an animal.
Yeah.
I think it was a year ago, and I yelled at the girl.
Yeah.
I was
Because
very
it's the
mean to
worst thing you
her,
can
which
do.
is not
Yeah.
professional. But I'm like,
Well,
what are you doing? It was
yeah.
5 or 6 o'clock at night, very busy,
Oh yeah.
and she was chasing this husky. I said, "Is that your dog?" "Well, no, but I'm trying to get him." And I'm like, "No."
Yeah. And
She
especially
was
at dusk
chasing
when
this dog
visibility, yeah.
inadvertently. Like she wasn't
Yeah.
me. She didn't. She wasn't meaning to, of course.
Yeah,
But
of
she
course.
was chasing, literally chasing him into traffic.
Yeah, that's what I mean,
So
that is what
never
we
chase a dog.
instinctively do is, and when we say don't chase, I also try to make sure that people understand we don't just mean chasing, like running after. I mean, any move toward that animal is going to make them move away from you because they're trying to maintain a certain amount of distance that they're comfortable with between themselves and whoever's pursuing them. So, we talk a lot about like going into prey mode and self-protection and flight or fight and all of those kinds of things. And yeah, don't move toward the animal. Don't even look at the animal if you can, just lure them to you with food or, the calming signals we talk a lot about. And yeah, that's so important. I'm hoping to branch into some kind of public education about things like that with, maybe at clinics and shelters to teach people about that. Just even that one piece is just so important because it's usually the first thing that someone tries, and it just makes everything so much worse than it could
Yeah, so
be.
you're going to drive them into traffic. You're going to drive them further into the woods. We had
To
a dog
another
on the
place.
ice.
Yeah. Oh,
This
God.
officer was driving them further onto the lake.
Oh my God, that's such a nightmare. Yeah.
No, it's
I
definitely
actually,
it's
when I
one of
was a
those things
kid,
don't
I was
do.
out, I grew up in a pretty kind of suburban, rural, bridge transition kind of area. And we, no one had their dog. This was in the 70s. We didn't have dogs on leashes or anything out there. And so I was walking with my little Scotty dog. And my father, of course, said, no matter what you do, do not go walking on the river. We lived right on the James River, which is a big river in central Virginia. And it was frozen over. And he was like, do not go walk on it. So what did I do? Naturally, I went for a walk with my little Scotty dog off leash. And there was a guy who lived down the river from us who a lot of money, and he liked ducks. And so he would thaw out a portion of the river so that his ducks could have a place to swim and nest and all that stuff. And we got close enough that my dog could see these ducks, and he took off running. And I was like, oh no, this is not going to go well, because I couldn't run after him because I knew that the ice was going to get thinner. And I thought, he's going to fall in. It all ended up okay. But yeah, like, just what a nightmare. And lesson learned, don't, ignore your dad's advice and
Very
told you
terrifying
not to go walking
situation.
on the river. Yeah, it was very scary. So anyway, all right. Well, thank you so much again for your time. And I will be sure to let you know when this goes up.
Fabulous. Thank you
Thank you
so
so
much for
much.
having me, and I hope I
Oh,
was
you're
able to
welcome.
answer.
Thank you, Stephanie. Have a good
Thank
one.
you. You
Bye.
too. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
I'm so grateful for my guests, Stephanie Gingras, and for you for joining me today. No Place Like Home is a podcast about missing pets. I feature content from owners, finders, volunteers, and professionals. I always appreciate a rating and review on your podcast app, and a follow on Facebook, where you can find the show at NPLH Mitch. That's N as in no, P as in place, L as in like, H as in home, Mitch. MITCH. Find episodes, transcripts, and additional information at noplacelikehome.show. If you have questions or feedback, you can contact me at nplhmitch@gmail.com. Remember to always think missing, not stray or dumped. This podcast was created, hosted, recorded, and produced by me, Mitch Bernard. The opinions expressed on this show are those of the people expressing them and do not necessarily represent the views of any other entity. Thanks for listening.
I am not a witness here to call you in for the things that you've done or the thing that you did. And I'm not the shadow of anyone you've been. All I am is a friend, your friend to the end. All I am is a friend, your friend to the end. All I am is a friend.